Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac Devere. How much of the iceberg have we seen?
The real answer is I don't know, but we keep uncovering more bits of ice.
When you see, for example, that Mueller indictment of the 13 Russians, you know about intelligence operations. Right. Does it strike you that there's a lot more coming?
Yeah. Oh, in my view?
Yes.
Yes.
Today's guest, General Michael Hayden, the former head of the NSA and CIA under George W. Bush. Have you read the Mueller indictment of the 13 Russians? If you haven't, you should. It's 37 pages long and pretty plainly written. It's frightening. But there's a whole lot of stuff flying back and forth about all the Russian investigations. Too many details to keep track of, too many names and players and narratives. And over the weekend, when the Democratic memo came out in response to the Nunes memo, I was asking one of our reporters about something he wrote about it, and he told me that I was mistaking a key detail. And that's me. I've been following it pretty closely. I get paid to follow it pretty closely. So in trying to understand this, I decided it'd be a good idea to go to someone who can help make more sense of it. And since Bob Mueller isn't doing any interviews these days, I tracked down Michael Hayden at his office a few blocks from the White House and asked him what to make of all of it. He knows intelligence operations. He knows the ins and outs of how these things work behind the scenes. Sure, it's been 9 years since he's been at the CIA, but there aren't many people with his level of expertise. It was quite a discussion, and not all that reassuring about where he thinks we are in terms of being vulnerable for the 2018 and 2020 elections. Check out the article on the website about this, and you'll see, among other things, a quote from Doug Lute, a former Army guy who was Obama's last ambassador to NATO. He says he looks at what happened in 2016 as, and this is his quote, classic Russian or even Soviet military tactics, a broad front probing attack until you find a point of weakness, and then you amass your force and pour through that point of weakness. So he thinks it's going to get much, much worse. Let me know what you think of this one. Email me at isaac@politico.com and follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Isaac Devere. And make sure you subscribe and rate us because, man, let me tell you what's coming up. Washington Governor Jay Inslee, chair of the Democratic Governors Association. Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rossello. Matt Gaetz. Beto O'Rourke. And coming up, our first official live off-message podcast event straight from South by Southwest with Arnold Schwarzenegger. So come to Austin, or if you can't, get ready to listen to that one. It's going to be great. Send me your questions if you've got them for the governor. You can hear our podcast with him from last summer to get a sense of some of the things that are on his mind. Or check out the article I wrote back in October called The Strange Political Afterlife of Arnold Schwarzenegger, which included, among other things, my going to Oktoberfest in Munich with him and the Arnold Schwarzenegger Museum at the home he grew up in Austria. And now, my conversation with General Michael Hayden. Let's rewind all the way here. I think a lot of people know who you are, but tell me how you get into intelligence work in the first place.
Oh, yeah. I was a student at university back during the Vietnam War. And back in those days, universal military service was the rule. And in my neighborhood, universal meant universal. So everyone expected to be in the armed forces. Since I was at university, Duquesne in Pittsburgh, they had ROTC. Why not do this as an officer? So I joined the Air Force program, was studying history, which seems a good fit for intelligence, analytic, data-based, and so on.
I got a master's degree in history, but nobody wanted me anywhere near.
Well, and then the Air Force let me stay at Duquesne to get a master's degree at the height of the Vietnam War, 67, 68, 69, which was that. Frankly, very generous on their part. And when on active duty, they put me in intelligence. And I have pretty much off and on been in intelligence for my nearly 40-year career.
You seem like you were very reluctant to be a critic of President Trump and the administration. And then there was a moment in November. I'm going to read your tweet to you. He had tweeted some things attacking CNN, and you wrote, "If this is who we are or who we are becoming, I've wasted 40 years of my life. Until now, it was not possible for me to conceive of an American president capable of such an outrageous assault on truth, a free press, or the First Amendment."
Yeah, so let's talk about the prequel.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what happened before the tweet. Clearly, I had disagreements with policy. And the way I would frame it during the campaign was, look, if he governs in any way consistent with the way he's talking, I think we have a right to be concerned. All right, but there was always conditional.
Right.
There was always
the
if in there. I was taken aback by the not a Muslim ban, which looked a lot like a Muslim ban. And in fact, the courts have said it's a Muslim ban.
Several times at this point, yeah.
as being non-fact-based decision-making. And in fact, it wasn't useful. It was harmful, all right? And so I had my concerns. But, you know, I know how this works. I can count. Gary, Ohio. Gary, Pennsylvania. Gary, Wisconsin.
Michigan.
You get to be president, yeah. All right? And so, you know, my countrymen had voted in our rather complex, not direct election way.
I didn't expect that you were going to get into an electoral college.
And so he is the president and therefore deserves respect for the office and respect for the man.
Yeah.
Now, I'm criticizing him because he's making these kind of instinctive judgments about foreign policy rather than fact-based. But I have to keep reminding myself, yeah, those are the instincts that got him elected president. And all the supposed fact-based guys said this can't possibly happen.
Right.
So, we need to give the office some respect and, frankly, give the man some respect. But that statement by the president really, really pushed me to be off balance. Freedom of the press is such a critical aspect of American civil polity. When you go back to the history, through the history of the Republic, it's the freedom of the press that's enabled us to right our wrongs, to correct our courses, and fact-based criticism of the executive, of the government. That's the only firm place to put your foot, to push back. I mean, if you don't have that, you've got no place from which to push back on an executive. And so, I wasn't claiming that President Trump was that executive. I'm just saying, but if you destroy the press, you destroy this guarantee.
I mean, I feel like I agree with you, not just because I am a professional journalist, yeah. But as an American, right? It's an important thing.
And I got cred in this one, all right? I got street cred because I've been beaten up by the press left and right multiple years as director of this, that, and the other thing, all right? But I never condemned the press. When my public affairs guy would be running down the hall saying, you won't believe what they're going to print, I would occasionally then be asked to make a phone call. Mm-hmm. And I would call usually the publisher. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, you were the CIA director, well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. Because we've already done our arguing with the reporter, and I would call down to the editor or publisher, and I would always begin kind of an article of faith, begin the conversation with, number one, thanks for taking my call, but as you suggest, the director of CIA is calm; they're probably going to take the call.
Yeah, I would have taken your call when you were CIA director,
and so thank you for taking the call. Now, look, before we get into the specifics, trust me. I understand we both have a role to play in preserving American liberty and American security, but I fear that the way you're about to perform your role, implicitly legitimate role, the way you're about to perform your role is going to make it much harder for me to perform mine. Can we talk? Mm-hmm. And in almost all instances, we talked. And they were conversations among people who knew they had different roles.
I was just having a conversation with a young journalist yesterday who had observed a relationship that I have with a source, said it seems like a friendly relationship. How do you pull that off? And I said, well, we can be friendly, but that person has a job to do and I have a job to do. And we can be nice about it until we're not nice about it and fight about a story.
We have roles to play that inherently have tension from time to time. They never have to be impersonal or inhuman.
So that was November. Now we're in February. Where does your thinking go?
You know, it's a mixed bag, and I really do try to not be reflexive.
Do you think that you've wasted 40 years of your life?
No, I haven't.
That was a question
right? Keep in mind, my tweet was also conditional.
Yeah.
If this is who we are or who we are becoming. And so I meant it less as a cri de coeur from the depths of despair, as a let's be careful out here, all right? Because if we do go that way, I will feel. And not just me. I was trying to represent.
Anybody felt like I was just Michael Hayden speaking here.
Right. So it was kind of a cautionary tale. All right. And so now we've gone forward. Look, a lot of things the president does makes me uncomfortable. He's actually done, I think, some positive things, said some positive things in the last couple of days.
About gun control?
About gun control and some things. Now, look, I think it's more than a brick shy of a load. in terms of what he's proposing, but at least it's movement against his base. Mm-hmm. And that's where you really begin to see the character of a president.
Right. And we'll have to see what happens with
that. Yeah,
no,
we'll see. We've seen this happen before with DACA, and all of a sudden, poof, it's gone. But let's see. And I give the president credit for going out there and listening to folks. Let me give the president credit, too. You know, that we had another kerfuffle here with regard to the phone call to the widow of an American soldier mm-hmm. killed in Africa. And I was on the air, and I had some criticisms. One was they weren't telling the truth. The president did actually say he knew what he was getting into. But by all accounts, he said that. And so quit denying it. Come on, just tell the truth. But I also said, if you have never had to make that phone call, and I have, if you have never had to make that phone call, be quiet. You don't have credentials to criticize, because that is an incredibly difficult phone call to make, and the president deserves credit that he did it himself personally, which he does not have to do. So I look for those places where to say, well, that's a good thing. But there is, frankly, a broad sweep of things about which I am still incredibly uncomfortable.
I want to talk about where we are on the Russia investigation here. It's been 9 years since you were at the CIA, so your information is a little out of date. When you look back on this, were there things that you feel like that you were tracking then that maybe should have, and with the power of hindsight,
right, sure.
made you think, oh, this something like this could have been coming?
So the answer is no, but, all right? It's that I wasn't tracking, mm-hmm. okay? It wasn't that I was tracking and didn't give enough importance to A, B, or C. We were consumed with the issues of the day, which frankly were counterterrorism and counterproliferation,
sure.
all right? And so I, as director, more than 2.5 years, I went to more than 50 countries. In an official capacity to actually get some things done.
Yeah.
Not one of those countries was named Russia.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Vladimir Putin thinks I'm sitting up there in the 7th floor at Langley plotting how to make his day less happy than it would otherwise be as a full-time task. And frankly, the shortfall I had was not that I was trying to torment Vladimir Vladimirovich. The shortfall I had was I wasn't paying enough attention to him or his country.
Yeah.
And I think that was broadly true of the American intelligence community.
It seems like people have mocked President Obama for saying in one of the presidential debates with Mitt Romney, right, that the Cold War called and wanted its foreign
right.
policy back
yeah.
when Romney was trying to raise the issue of Russia. And obviously there was an interest of Russia.
Yeah, there was more to it. And frankly, I think, I'll speak for myself personally, I was late to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, from the outside looking in, I think my old community was late to the issue. I'll give you an example. 2008, the Russians invaded Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's August of that year. I get a phone call from Steve Hadley,
the National Security Advisor.
National Security Advisor, essentially saying, how far are they going? Are they going to Tbilisi?
Mm-hmm.
I'll call you back, Steve. Okay. So I go.
That's when you do the intelligence part of being.
Yeah. So I go to my outer office and I say, get my Georgia people up here right away. And
how many people are the Georgia people?
Hang on. So my two EAs start going through the electronic Rolodex and they're sending emails and picking up the phone. And I turn to my chief of staff and go, Larry, we got Georgia people, right?
And did you?
And we did. And they were very good. But okay. My teaching point was it wasn't a group that I was carrying on normal dialogue. And so institutionally, I mean, the institution is doing its homework, all right?
Yep.
But in terms of leadership focus, leadership interest, leadership energy, leadership tasking, we had drifted away from the Russian target.
Yeah. And somewhat in fairness, what Mitt Romney was talking about was not, it doesn't seem like what we are
no,
seeing, right?
It wasn't this.
He was talking about a more 20th century geopolitical struggle with Russia.
Exactly.
I wonder that one of the ways that people have responded to what's happened here is that, hey, America gets involved in other countries' elections.
Yeah, so
that's something you know.
So
something
I would
about, right?
I would simply say that I would be the last person to deny that we have never tried to influence foreign public opinion.
Right.
All right. I would say certainly that we've never done what the Russians did. Going against a mature Western democracy in an effort to, number one, mess with their heads, which was goal number one, to erode our confidence in our institutions. Secondly, to punish Hillary Clinton because he frankly hates her. Three, to delegitimize the inevitable Clinton presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And then late summer was, holy smoke, this other guy might win. And so they really did push, try to push focus and votes in the direction of Donald Trump. Now, look.
And that's what you see from the indictment.
Oh, yeah.
That is from
the intelligence community assessment mm-hmm. that was made public mm-hmm. in January, and it's from the indictment. The surprising thing about the indictment was it wasn't surprising.
You know how to read this stuff.
It follows that course quite clearly.
How much of the iceberg have we seen?
The real answer is I don't know, but we keep uncovering more bits of ice. Mm-hmm. And so Jim Clapper said this not very long ago, that everything that was happening on Facebook and the ads that were being bought and so on, mm-hmm. that's new material for him.
And that's Obama's national intelligence director.
Yes. Right. And so it wasn't visible to him when they were making, frankly, their assessment that the Russians were up to no good and we're going to have an impact on
our election. When you see, for example, that Mueller indictment of the 13 Russians, you know about intelligence operations. Right. Does it strike you that there's a lot more coming?
Yeah. Oh, in my view?
Yes.
Yes. All right.
But as someone who didn't run Russian intelligence, but you know about intelligence.
I also didn't run law enforcement either.
Right.
All right. But I know Bob Mueller. I know how thorough he is. And in essence, what he has laid out here, what I think is a step in a very methodical process, is here's the crime, right? And it's what these foreign actors did that violated U.S. law. And now the next question to be asked and answered is, any Americans help?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've now established the criminal enterprise,
right?
Which is what the Russians were doing. Let me just finish the story about what it is we do. What it is we do, okay, that is roughly parallel to what the Russians did, is very much above board. It's organizations, NGOs actually, mm-hmm. sponsored by the Democrat and Republican parties here in the United States that try to go to other countries and try to build up civil polity, try to build up the social organs that are required for democracy to succeed, a belief in the rule of law.
The fundamental thing is democracy is sought after. Look, the Russians were putting out fake news, but they might say like Voice of America.
Well, actually, Voice of America does not. And actually, Voice of America is criticized from the American right for not being the Voice of America. it goes out there and simply tries to tell the truth.
Right.
Which frankly, makes it a very powerful voice for America.
So it's not propaganda in that way.
Right.
But from the Russian mindset, maybe that it would be like, well, they're trying to push American values on us. Leave us alone.
Actually, let me reason by analogy, all right? So I'm in a debate last May in London. It's actually Election Day, all right?
Oh, British Election Day.
British Election Day.
So this is when Theresa May should not have called the election.
Exactly. That's the day. So we're having a debate for a group called Intelligence Squared. And I'm up there with the former defense and foreign minister of Poland, mm-hmm. Sikorski. And we're debating. One was a scholar from King's College in London, and I'll remember the other.
All right, so a bunch of slouches.
No, actually, a very good debate. And it was, should we bring Russia in from the cold? It's mm-hmm. time to change our policy towards the Russian Federation. And in the argument, in essence, the low state of Western Russian relations was laid at the feet of the West because of the expansion of NATO,
mm-hmm.
all right? And we moved NATO up.
Pushed too far.
Up to Russia's front door. And I said, well, that's really an interesting theory, because as that was happening, you do know, don't you, that NATO was disarming. We were pulling American forces out of Germany as fast as we could. Mm-hmm. We went from, you know, dozens of brigades to several brigades of American forces. So I get it that the geographic scope of NATO is getting larger, but NATO as a military organization is getting weaker and weaker. And I simply made the point that I understand why he feared NATO, but it wasn't NATO arms. It was NATO ideas. It was NATO ideals. And so I take the point when you and I talk democracy and free press and open elections and responsive and responsible and transparent governments, that may sound like subversion to some people.
Right.
But it's what we believe in.
You said we don't know yet whether the next question is whether Americans helped here.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that I know from covering the Clinton campaign and talking to people who worked on the campaign in the time since, they believe then and they continue to believe that there were Americans helping the Russians.
So
they look at this and they say it was too sophisticated an operation.
Yeah.
They,
let's give the Russians some credit.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it doesn't have to be all that sophisticated. All right. I mean, this is talk to Garry Kasparov.
I have. He's been on the podcast.
Yeah, former Soviet chess champion, now Russian dissident, right? And Gary says, you know, don't give too much credit to Putin here, all right?
Yeah.
He's not playing chess.
This was actually what we talked about. I said to him, when you hear that people are playing chess, and he said, Putin is not a chess player and Trump is not a chess player. Actually, yeah.
Gary goes deeper. He says, don't play checkers. It's more like blackjack.
Yes, that's what he said.
Yeah. So let's not overemphasize the sophistication.
It's not in what we've seen so far what's been in the indictments, but one of the things that they would point out is, for example, that the way that the email dumps were going on in the spring when it was the D-Trip hack.
The timing.
Right?
The timing was
good. And then by the end of it, by the Podesta emails, it was a searchable database. It was that it just seemed like they were getting better very quickly.
Sure. Okay. I would give them credit. But look, they had American help. Okay, now let me follow up very quickly before we get some impressions here. They had American help because, as someone who may actually know something about covert influence, me, all right, covert influence campaigns do not create fractures in the society. They exploit fractures.
Right.
And so the most fundamental American help they needed to have was that we are a fractured society. We have self-gerrymandered ourselves inside social media. Into groups with very different worldviews, which is an invitation for a foreign power then to come in and exploit that division. Now, more specifically,
does it strike you that they, when they turned to Trump, and it looks like from what we know so far, they didn't start as supporting Trump. They were started as trying to sow division, but then they did turn to supporting Trump. That the reason why is because they thought that would create the most chaos.
Absolutely, absolutely. The way I would summarize it is the overall objective of the Russian effort was to mess with our heads, erode confidence, all right? And they decided by midsummer that the very best way they could mess with our heads was to make more people vote for Donald Trump, period. And that's exactly what happened. Now, with regard to other American help, which is different from collusion, all right? You know, a campaign who continually calls attention to WikiLeaks, that's help. You realize, although the president said the Russians had no effect on the final outcome, 164 times during the final 30 days of the campaign, he called attention to stolen American documents being published by, bada bada bing, WikiLeaks.
He said, Russia, go steal more emails, right?
Right. And then you've got the Veselnitskaya meeting with the president's son and son-in-law, which fundamentally was, the Russian government has dirt on Hillary Clinton. Do you want it? And the answer was, sure. And
I think then, it was love it was the response
exactly,
from Donald Trump Jr.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you've got the synchronization of the campaign's movements with WikiLeaks and that exchange of text messages between Don Jr. and it appears to have been Julian Assange himself, at which point they're calling attention to themes and websites where the data can be
It sounds to me like you
harvested.
See a pretty strong case here.
I see a case of political malpractice. I see a case of a campaign operating outside the normal norms of American political discourse. I see a case for a campaign who does not ever seems to have said, you know, that wouldn't be right.
Bernie Sanders said the other day, he sort of gave voice and then didn't own it fully himself, that some people say Russia must have something on Trump.
I don't need to believe that to tell you and believe what it was I just told you with regard to what happened. I'll leave that aside.
There was a New York Times article a couple of weeks ago that was about this intelligence effort, communication with some Russian operative, maybe con man, that part of it was
I've read about that, right. He offered more information.
And he was promising footage from the famous P-tape, right, which we don't know if it exists. The president says it's disgusting and false, and there's never been any proof that it exists.
Right.
Does that kind of – that rumor being out there, that is that dangerous? Is that
– So maybe the Russians are still messing with our heads?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that might be a very plausible explanation for what's going on here. Now, look, I know nothing about this other than what I've read. But based upon what I have read, American intelligence did not want to touch that second category of information.
Yeah. Which makes it seems like leads you to believe it's not true.
No, it leads me to believe that if it were true, it seems like American intelligence was trying to be very, very careful here.
There's this thought, obviously a lot of information is coming out here from the Mueller probe. Do you think that there is a danger of sources and methods of intelligence gathering being put out there?
Yeah, sure, always, all right. But That's a permanent question in front of anyone who wants to use intelligence, because when you use it, particularly when you can use it to great effect in a way that an adversary doesn't expect, you run the risk of exposing sources and methods. So, you know, it's nothing new. And frankly, I think this is an important enough topic to resolve, not to prove one way or another, but to allow ourselves as a people to get beyond it. I'd be boiling pretty far forward.
Do you fear that there was some concern about that with the Nunes memo, the information was being put out there that could compromise?
So when I read the Nunes memo, okay.
And you read it.
Oh, yeah. When I read the Nunes memo, the lightest objection I had was reviewing sources and methods. Okay. Now, look, we don't like to talk about FISA applications, period, dot, next case.
Just right? As a baseline.
Yeah, right. But I don't know that I would have anchored my concerns on sources and methods, other than the fact that it made public that the American government had enough evidence to establish to a standard of probable cause that Carter Page was the agent of a foreign power.
Yeah.
Doesn't Carter Page, who's not been accused of anything, enjoy some privacy rights with regard to that? Mm-hmm. I mean, why? I mean, when you look.
So it's really about Carter Page.
Yeah. I mean, seriously.
It's not the case that was made by anybody about it, right?
But why would you do that to an American citizen?
Yeah.
Right? But you knew when the Nunes memo came out criticizing the justification for the FISA warrant, the only defense against that claim is to go out and say, well, no, we had a lot more. and here we are.
Does the politicizing of the intelligence, the congressional committees, the interplay with the president and the intelligence community, is that dangerous? Is that going to hurt the intelligence
committee? It's horrible. Look, these are select committees. Historically, they have tried and frankly succeeded often to stay above politics. And we have seen them descend into the depths of political knife fighting quite a bit in the last 10 or 15 years. My last 2 years in government.
So long before President Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My last 2 years in government, I was running the Central Intelligence Agency for a controversial and weakened Republican president with both chambers under Democrat control and a whole lot of people thinking they were running for president.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's about as bad a formula as you can come up with. And so we've seen this over maybe hyper partisanship before. Now, even at the height of what several years ago, Senator Feinstein pushes out a study on detentions and interrogations that I'm quite
towards
on
the end
record,
of the Obama administration.
Right, I'm quite on record as saying that's a bad idea and it's not true anyway. At least when that happened, there was a Republican minority report published at the same time and a CIA report that went out at the same time. And it got tossed out there. My personal views, we shouldn't be talking about
this.
But it went out there, and at least the American people had a variety of sources on which to make their judgment. And we'll live with the judgment. That's not what the Nunes memo was about.
Right.
It was a Republican-only memo, and frankly, done in a way that you knew the Democrats weren't going to be able to get the rest of the story out.
I was talking to Doug Lute, former Army guy, former ambassador in NATO a couple months ago, and he said to me that when – and this is before he'd seen, I think, any of the indictments and any of the plea deals – that when he looked at what he could see of the Russian stuff, he said it looked like a probing attack to him, seeing how far they could go.
So here's
– right, and seeing what the weaknesses are, seeing how we'd respond,
sure.
And then knowing what to do
So there are a lot of things to unpack in Doug's commentary there, okay? So number one, probing in terms of how far they could go, yes. And
with the intent of going further.
Well, they'll go as far as they can go, but they're gauging our response. And frankly, I think everyone agrees now our response was tepid and late. All right. And that's without judgment on President Obama, because he's out there without a map.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this has never happened before. And he's got to be sensitive to appearing to put a thumb on the electoral scale. And I get all that. But I do think the Obama administration is fairly criticized for not pushing back against the Russians in Crimea, in Ukraine, in Syria.
Sort of laying the groundwork, right?
Across the board.
But in terms of the operation into the American election.
So we need to parse our language very, very carefully here. A lot of this is described as the Russian cyber attack. Yeah, there was some cyber stuff here, but you know that 400-pound guy the president keeps talking about? He actually probably could have done that. The cyber thing here wasn't that sophisticated. right? Stealing emails from the DNC, all right? Stealing John Podesta's emails,
I mean, right? He fell for like a rarely simple phishing trick.
The elegant, the elegant part of this isn't the theft of the emails. That's an important enabler. The elegant part is weaponizing the information, DC leaks, WikiLeaks, timing, Russian trolls, bot farms, sock puppets, and playing both sides of the American political spectrum to create division inside American civil politics.
It's going to be worse in 2018 in the midterms here in the 2020 election.
Well, look, I'm now a religious follower of Hamilton 68, a website out there that tracks the trending hashtags on Russian-controlled bots. And so you go back, when was it, late September, early October, the president's in Huntsville. He says, fire the sons of bitches. Remember the speech? I'm speaking presidentially here now. Yeah. All right. Within hours, the trending hashtag on Russian bots was take a knee. All right. So the Russians
Release the memo was.
We've seen the same thing with release the memo. Prior to release the memo, the trending hashtag was Schumer shutdown.
Yep.
Well, guess what's trending now? It's Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And if the Russians are performing like they performed in every other debate here, they're playing both sides.
Right.
They're pushing information out there simply to drive Americans into their corner.
The bot trackers that I've seen are mostly pushing things that are favorable to the White House.
Well, right. they're pushing issues. So there is an eerie and uncomfortable echo between some of the things the president tweets, the different points of emphasis on Fox News, the thematic stories in the alt-right media, and Russian bots.
What's that
They each for their own purposes, and that's the important point. Okay, I don't have to create collusion here.
Mm-hmm.
Each for their own purposes are well served by creating deeper divisions within American society. The president to play to his base, Fox News for ratings, the alt-right because they have a conspiratorial view of everything, and the Russians to mess with our heads.
All right. So it's not collusion, it's just concordance, essentially.
Convergence.
Was that the intelligence term?
I just made that up.
I asked you, I don't know if you remember this, we spoke on the phone last spring, and I said to you, do you think the military has any concerns about President Trump's leadership? You speak to people in the military still,
I do.
You don't?
Yeah.
I know.
I do. And they're made uncomfortable by some of the things the president says or tweets.
Mm-hmm.
All right. For example, when the president just kind of catches everyone off balance with the transgender question. I mean,
We know that he said that he spoke to military officials and he did not.
And we did not. Right. And he had the remarkable series of events where the chairman of the Joint Chiefs simply says, steady in the ranks.
Right. But also in that, there was a moment, it was like 10 minutes in between tweets where he said, I'm proud, you know, in consultation with military leaders and dot, dot, dot. And for 10 minutes or whatever it was, nobody knew what it was. And there was a story that at the Pentagon that day for those 10 minutes, they were like, are we bombing North Korea?
Yeah.
Right.
So you've got people in the military who I think are made uncomfortable with some of the tweets. I mean, I just told you this 40-year veteran got uncomfortable with the attack on the free press. You realize the American military split just like the American population did on the NFL take a knee question.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so I think the American military would be more comfortable with less division within our society.
But we're not in a place where people would not follow orders.
People will follow all lawful orders, and people will not follow any unlawful order.
All lawful, no matter what it would be.
They may simply say, a moment, sir.
Right. Well, it's funny. I did one of these with Bill Perry in the fall, former defense secretary, and we were talking about his obsession is nuclear strikes, and he was saying there is no process
This is not built for reflection.
Right.
It's built for speed.
Right.
Yeah.
And he said that he was worried about it, but obviously he's nowhere near the Pentagon leadership anymore. I do wonder what would happen if there would be an order. And the nuclear strike is not because it's such a speedy thing. Is there something else where people would?
Look, American officers have incredible deference to civilian leadership.
Yeah.
They also are well-drilled in the laws of armed conflict. American officers will do their duty.
Mm-hmm. But the duty, it
They're drilled with deep deference to civilian control and deep respect for the laws of armed conflict.
What do you make of the job that Mike Pompeo is doing in your old post?
Look, look at all the positive things. All right. For a while there, we didn't think we were going to be able to talk to the president. Remember that? I don't need to get a briefing every day. And now Director Pompeo is in there routinely. I think the agency is very, very, very happy with that.
Oh, the president does not read the briefing, is what we've been told.
From the press accounts, let me say he's a visual and oral learner.
That does seem correct. Is that a concern? Do people make too much of that?
Yes, it's a concern. Yes, people make too much of that because we accommodate to the president. Okay, President Bush learned in the dialogue. He's a reader. All right, you give him something, he'd read it. Mm-hmm. But then you knew the real learning was taking place in the conversation.
Right.
Or the argument.
Yeah.
All right.
And with Obama,
Obama
was mostly reading.
Yeah. He's reflective. He'll read, hard to read him. Mm-hmm.
You had some of those interactions with him.
I did. Right. He needs to slowly internalize the information. So we adjust for every president. Now, to be honest, it's probably a bigger adjustment than average with this president.
Which is part of what Donald Trump ran on, that it would be a bigger adjustment than average.
No background in international affairs, no understanding of the American intelligence community and how the plumbing worked. Mm-hmm. And so you're beginning from a fairly basic baseline here and beginning to talk about these things with the president. I don't envy their task. You know, at what point do you assume too much in terms of the president's prior knowledge, and at what point do you insult the president by telling him something that should be obvious? Yeah, hard. And so I'm sure my old guys are trying to do that the best way they can. Yeah. Now, yes, make too much of it, but, all right, not everything in life can be boiled down to a killer graphic. Mm-hmm. Not everything in life can be expressed in a few trenchant words in a fast-moving conversation. Some things do need the fine print. Some things do need the nuance. And I'm hopeful that they're figuring out some way to get that into the mind of the president, who is instinctive rather than reflective and is action-oriented rather than reflection-oriented.
So as we sit here, how worried are you about what's going to happen to our elections?
So I think we are taking prudent steps to protect the actual election, the vote count, and so on.
Now we know the security of the machines, and we know. Although the
Russians have probed that, but frankly,
there was one machine that the hackers got into where the username was ABCDEFG and the password I think was ABCDEFG, which does not. I'm not a computer expert. That doesn't seem secure.
Doesn't seem right. Yeah, there's a great line from one of John Wayne's great roles. Sergeant Stryker in the Sands of Iwo Jima. Life's tough, but it's tougher when you're stupid.
It reminds me of in Spaceballs where they say like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, only an idiot would put that on there. It's like from the Marx Brothers ripped off. But all right, go in there and change the codes on all my luggage. That kind of.
Yeah. So the Russians probed the electoral mechanisms here,
right?
But didn't manipulate them.
But manipulating us, it seems like.
That's the punchline.
Right.
I think that was simply done to erode, again, confidence in our institutions, in our processes. An actual Russian manipulation of the vote would be a nuclear weapon in this kind of thing, which I think they know would prompt a
but as long as they're
don't want to have
the psyops here and the manipulation.
So that's the point I want to make. Right now, the administration is making a great deal about we're protecting the electoral mechanisms. Good, go do that. That's not what the Russians did.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got this
is
whole
President
other
Trump
conflict
inoculating
over.
Them from and leaving us more open to this because he's not taking it seriously. He feels like this is an attack on his legitimacy.
He does, and therefore he finds it very hard to say what needs to be said, which was, Vlad, I know what you did. You know what you did. You're never going to do it again. And oh, by the way, you're still going to pay a price for doing it once.
Right. You may have helped me get to be president, but you're going to be sorry that you did, or that kind of thing.
But unfortunately, the president appears to be incapable, for personal reasons, frankly, of making that statement. And we saw the testimony not long ago from the intelligence chief. They've not been directed to do much about what you and I are just describing here. And the line I would give you is, this was an attack against us from an unexpected direction against a previously unknown weakness. And it seems foreign and domestic, law enforcement and intelligence, politics and policy, federal and local. It hit that seam. And we don't patch seams without extraordinary effort, energy, focus, and extraordinary structures.
I mean, it seems like we're in trouble from what you're saying.
And we don't go extraordinary unless the president says, everyone over here, huddle up. Here's what we're going to
do.
So
that's not happening.
And it's not happening. And so that does make me very concerned.
You were the NSA, you were the CIA. How many secrets of this country do you have stuck in your head that you'll never be able to talk about?
Well, I would say that the class of secrets I have that no one has ever talked about is probably pretty small, but there is a class of those secrets. Mm-hmm. There's a much larger group of secrets that other people think they can talk about that I never will.
Mm-hmm. And of the ones that you can't talk about, is that hard? Right?
No. You know, you...
I mean, I'm a reporter. Most of the time when people tell me something, I turn around and publish it.
Yeah. No, I understand. And so I have got to get used to...
I keep some secrets.
People... Yeah, of course. Yeah. Who are your sources?
Right.
People who have chosen this profession have to compartmentalize. Otherwise, they can't... Number one, they can't keep their mental health. And number two, they can't be very good at espionage.
Mm-hmm. So not even your wife, nobody knows it.
There are some things nobody knows.
All right. General Michael Hayden, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
The look on his face when I asked him about the secrets, hard not to get the sense that some of what's locked in his head would blow all our minds. Thanks to Zach Stanton for producing. Remember to subscribe and rate Off Message. Do it now. Coming up, Jay Inslee, Ricardo Roseo, Matt Gaetz, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Email me your thoughts at isaac@politico.com. I promise I'll get back to you. And follow me on Twitter @IsaacDover. And catch you next time on Off Message.